You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Welcome back to our series on the evolution of Demodex blepharitis management. I'm Dr. Walt Whitley, Director of Professional Relations and Education at Virginia Eye Consultants in Norfolk, Virginia. I'm joined by Dr. Cecilia Ketting, Assistant Professor at the University of Colorado School of Medicine in Denver, Colorado. In this episode, Advancing Care in Demodex Blepharitis, Breaking New Ground, we'll dive into treatment sequencing, special patient considerations, and how emerging therapies may improve outcomes in complex cases. So let's jump right in. How are you, Cecilia?
I'm good. How about yourself?
It's great to have you here and great to have another discussion on one of our favorite topics.
Absolutely.
And so let's just go ahead and get started.
Okay.
And so my first question for you is, how does Demodex blepharitis intersect with other common ocular conditions, such as meibomian gland dysfunction and dry eye disease?
So I really feel like they just kind of go hand in hand. And a lot of times we think we have one, but we may have the other. And we start with our symptoms, right? Patients might come in with irritation, grittiness, tearing, burning, and that could be a whole host of different things. Add in itching, right? Depending, is it itchy in the corner or is it all along the eyelid? You might be thinking allergies or you might be thinking blepharitis Demodex, right? And so when we have all of these overlapping things, it really comes down to clinical signs that help us start to figure out where the true problem is. But again, with dry eye disease, it's multifactorial, and many times we have multiple of these things together.
Yeah, we do see them both together. But the question is, how do we treat it? We can throw so many things at patients, but then that also decreases compliance. So my question for you is, in patients who present with MGD or dry eye and Demodex, and let's say the irritation score is 0 or 1 out of 10, 10 being horrible, let's say it's a 9 or an 8. You know, how do you prioritize treatment? Do you give them everything and address both? Do you do it stepwise? Tell us about that.
Sometimes it depends on the patient, right? Because we have to read the room. But most of the time it's a stepwise. And if I see collarettes, if I see misdirected lashes, erythema, I see thickening of the margins, and I also see some MGD, my guess is the MGD also may be related to the Demodex issue. And we've seen some data from studies that have kind of echoed this. This was kind of something we thought anyway. And so what I will do is I will start with treating the Demodex, right? I'm going to get them started on at-home lid hygiene, getting it clean, because that's a habit I want them to continue. I'm going to use something that's got tea tree oil or okra-based cleaner to help with that. But I'm also going to put them on lotilaner so that I can start to deal with that. Then I'm going to bring them back in that 6 to 8 weeks, and I'm going to look at them where they are and figure out what the next step might be, whether that's something like IPL that might be a thermo expression that might be a BlepharX or a BlepharX exfoliation. Sometimes if it's really bad, my patients are saying like heavy eyes and I'm seeing 150 to 200 collarettes, I might actually go ahead and clean the eyelids that same day if I'm able to, just to kind of get them rolling in the right direction.
Yeah, and it all depends on the presentation. So that was a symptomatic patient. What if they were a 3 out of 10, or let's say a 1 out of 10, and let's say they don't have any symptoms. Does that change your approach?
So in those asymptomatic patients, they kind of do present a challenge, because when someone doesn't say they have a problem, you have to kind of convince them they do so that they will do the treatment, right? And that can take a moment, but I'm going to treat it. If I see a collarette means that there's Demodex blepharitis, there's an overgrowth. And so I will still treat them at that time with their lid cleaning and with lotilaner. But I will definitely be showing them pictures. Pictures are worth 1,000 words.
Yeah.
They definitely find it disgusting when they see what I see, and it does help with compliance.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So, you know, I know you're a part of a study. It may have been at a center I'm very well familiar with.
Possibly.
But what consideration should be made for post or surgical patients in general? And you could also comment on contact lenses too.
Yes. So I was part of a study with Liz Yu. We looked at patients who were getting ready for cataract surgery, and we looked at meibomian gland atrophy levels in comparison with meibomian gland function and presence of collarettes. And what we found was not too surprising. The more collarettes you have, the more likely it is that you have MGD as well as meibomian gland atrophy. So we do know that there's this correlation that exists. Now, with our surgical patients, we want to make sure that we are preparing them the best we can for surgery so that their outcomes are better. If we don't acknowledge that there's a problem beforehand, we probably created the problem in their mind, right? So we need to acknowledge it, clean it up. This decreases risk for infection. This helps with making sure, especially in our premium IOL patients, that calculations are correct. And that makes sure that we have happier patients afterwards. Now, with contact lenses, there's been a couple of studies looking at that as well, as far as concern for contact lens dropout and issues with meibomian gland function, as well as Demodex. And we do know that that does increase the risk that a patient may drop out of contact lenses or decrease their wear time. And that can affect not only the patient, but thinking about your clinic and rates of dropout or dissatisfaction with their contact lenses. And that can, unfortunately, financially, some of our clinics.
Yeah. And so, you know, no matter what the patients are there for, we just talked surgical. We just talked a little bit about contact lenses. You know, our glaucoma patients, we got to look for the Demodex in those patients as well. But it's everywhere. And, you know, we have to look for it in order to identify and treat it. So, you know, we started talking about individualized treatments. And so how do you tailor therapy based on patient-specific factors? We mentioned severity. We mentioned asymptomatic or very symptomatic. What about prior treatment history? Let's say I've had dryness for 5 years and I'm coming to you. My eyes are irritating me. I mean, tell us more.
Well, so again, it's just signs, right? What do I see? If I see that there's collarettes and I know that Demodex blepharitis is there in this patient that's gone 5 years, and this actually sounds very similar to my entire clinic at this point, doctor number five clinics, and nothing's improved, taking a moment to kind of just look at it and say, okay, what has been done before? What's been done in conjunction? And how do you respond to it? And then kind of formulating whatever's going to work best for them. And, you know, in those patients, I find those that have been suffering for longer, who have not had any relief, are more motivated to deal with multiple concurrent therapies at the same time, knowing that we're really trying to hit it hard to kind of get them better. So in that patient, they're probably getting the whole shebang. They're getting the whole kitchen sink. We're cleaning. We're getting them started on lotilaner. We're getting them back in office for an IPL and for thermo expression, if those are appropriate in that patient.
So, you know, we talked about these comorbid conditions. What about that patient? So they're there, irritation, Demodex blepharitis. You put them on the treatment, you said 6 to 8 weeks. When are you putting them on it again? And, you know, how long does the treatment last? How often are you seeing the patient? When are you prescribing again?
Yeah. So if I've got patients with like rosacea, right? Rosacea has a high correlation with Demodex, and we know that there's a high risk that this is going to be a long-term issue. And it may be more of a pulse dose with them where we're doing it every 6 months, or I'm doing other things to kind of work to control it, like IPL, having them work with dermatologist and using topical ivermectin, metronidazole, niacinamide. But in clinic, I'm going to talk to them at the very least to all of these patients about daily cleaning with appropriate things that help control some of the bacteria in the area so that we decrease the risk, but I'm going to watch them. And all of our clinics are different. I may have more time than Walt now, right? I used to work with you, so I never had time. Now I have a little bit more time. I'm going to probably bring them back in 6 months. And then as I feel like we've kind of controlled things, it might just be that I see them once a year.
So when does the Demodex come back? That's after one treatment.
If you leave it, I mean, we aren't getting completely rid of them, right? They're part of our natural biome. And the question is, do we actually ever really want to eradicate them? Because we don't know exactly what the symbiotic relationship is. Could be 6 months, could be a year, depending on what underlying, right? Rosacea, yeah, probably 3 months I'm going to see it back if they're not cleaning, if they're not doing any IPL, if they're not doing other things to control it. But when we were treating these patients with only tea tree oil wipes, I could count every seasonal change, every season, they're going to come back, they're going to have a flare up, and we're going to be doing this again.
Yeah.
I'm not seeing that now, which is nice.
Correct. But, you know, whether it's blepharitis, dry eye, is treat and follow, right? Because, you know, these are chronic conditions that they're going to come back.
You got it.
And so you mentioned IPL. So are you, is lotilaner always a part of it? Because in my clinic, if they're getting IPL, I always put them on this first because we know the effects on the lashes. We know the effects on the glands as well. What about you?
Yes, for me as well. Yep. And even in some of my patients where I may only see, there's a reason I say if I see a colorette, they're getting it. It's because I know that there's an issue. And also, you know, looking at the data that's come out from the URSA trial, and we'll talk about it, that kind of just is more fuel for why I'm doing this.
Actually, you just mentioned the URSA trial.
Let's talk about it.
Do you want to talk about it? I mean, do you anticipate that treatment of Demodex blepharitis with lotilaner could not only resolve colorette formation, but also lead to measurable improvements in meibomian gland function and overall reduction in dry eye symptoms in affected patients?
So, since you asked, the URSA trial, what it was looking at was patients who had Demodex blepharitis and meibomian gland dysfunction, and looking at the use of 12 weeks of lotilaner, and it was either dosed at 2 or 3 times a day versus the vehicle. And what they found was at the end of 12 weeks, they found an improvement in the meibomian gland secretion score, meaning that there was better quality oil coming out. They also found an increase in the number of glands that were secreting clear meibum. So we're seeing improvement in the quality. We're seeing improvement in the number of glands functioning, as well as they saw the same things that we had with the initial FDA trials for lotilaner. An improvement in colorette cure, an improvement in lid margin erythema. So yes, I think this is going to change how it has changed how I'm treating these patients, because if I see that, again, they only have one colorette and they have meibomian gland dysfunction and I'm seeing poor quality meibum, it's not coming out as easily, I know that I'm probably going to get an improvement just by using the lotilaner.
Yeah, definitely, because we've seen the effectiveness of that. And you just mentioned in that smaller study, it almost replicated the Saturn trials, the combined Saturn trials. So that's very impressive. But then reiterating the things that matter to patients, the redness, the blurred vision. Those are quality of life issues for patients and so important for us to address. So what other research questions remain about the role of Demodex in ocular surface disease?
Oh, I think there's still some information, right? So if we have a patient who doesn't have colorettes, for me, a personal question would patients who don't have colorettes but do have meibomian gland dysfunction or poor quality meibum, is that actually related to Demodex blepharitis? Would that be beneficial? And, you know, you mentioned in our previous discussion about levels of Demodex found on lashes pulled that didn't have colorettes being 50%. That is a reason that maybe we should be looking at that. But then we also don't know at what level are these little guys causing problems. We know always causing a problem, but is there a balanced tipping point to where it's something that's causing symptoms? So I have a couple questions about it.
Yeah, you know, this wasn't part of the FDA clinical trials, but just talking about dry eye disease and the role itself, because we don't have a direct study that's other than the URSA study saying the impact, you know, what is the impact on the what is the DEQ6 now, or OSDI6 now with the TFOS DUS 3 report, you know, what is the reduction in symptoms? And, you know, I'm sure you've had patients just like I have. You know, they've tried all the different drops. They've had chronic dry eye. This was the one treatment, the lotilaner, is the only thing that makes them feel better. And so for her, I see colorettes. I'm keeping her on it. It's off-label, keeping them on that long. But, you know, off-label isn't off-limits.
Yeah. No, I agree. And there are those patients where that's just how we got to roll.
So, Sam, what is the single most important takeaway for optometrists and ophthalmologists when it comes to integrating new Demodex blepharitis treatments into practice?
So I think it's important to realize and remember that we do have a problem with Demodex blepharitis. We do know how to identify it at this point. Look down, look for colorettes, take the time to look at the lid margin. Many times it's something that's missed and may actually be causing the problems that you seem to not be able to fix. And we have an option at this point that works very well with our lotilaner that's been FDA approved.
For me, the single most important takeaway is going to be it's ubiquitous. I mean, everybody seems to have it after being a part of that study. you know, with 58% of patients, you know, just the impact that it has on patients that have undergoing cataract surgery, the glaucoma patients. And so any of the contact lens patients you mentioned. And so just having that patient look down, I mean, I used to just have them close their eyes. But I'm looking, then I started having them look down. I was still missing collarettes if I did not have that patient look down. So that's going to be a huge takeaway, as well as, you know, educating the patient and say, hey, you have it, I have it, a lot of people have it, but we have an effective treatment option for our patients. With that, thank you, Dr. Ketting, for walking us through the treatment sequencing, special considerations, and the future of Demodex blepharitis management. And thank you to our audience for joining this discussion. We hope you leave with practical strategies for incorporating novel therapies into individualized care and a deeper understanding of where the field is headed in managing this common ocular condition. So thank you so much, Sir Cecilia, and thank you all for listening.
Well, thank you, Dr. Whitley. This podcast was brought to you by Med Learning Group, who in support of improving patient care is jointly accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education, the Accreditation Council for Pharmacy Education, and the American Nurses Credentialing Center to provide education for the healthcare system. This CME activity was planned and produced in accordance with the ACCME Essentials. I would like to give a special thanks to our supporters, Tarsus Pharmaceuticals Incorporated, who provided an independent medical education grant for this activity.